Turuntuset tulee Joonael.
And today we will talk about inbound marketing. Inbound marketing has been a hot topic for many marketeers for some time now. And I'm really happy to present the topic here today by a representative of HubSpot, that is one of the world's biggest inbound marketing companies. So, John, let's start from the beginning. What is inbound marketing?
Yeah, I think in its easiest definition, it's being able to use, it can be HubSpot, but being able to use marketing software to attract traffic to your website.
And what is so special about the software, or what does the software do?
It's a combination of things. It would both be a tool, but also it's a methodology. And as a company, what tends to happen is you buy into the tool, and a risk, as we'll probably talk a little bit later, is that they tend to rely on the tool as opposed to using the tool by applying the methodology. So it's always a combination of the two, both the software and applying the whole inbound marketing methodology at the same time. So it's a successful pairing of methodology and software.
So as I understand, we need to start with the methodology.
Yes. I mean, from my experience over the last couple of years, what I've seen is that I think now companies are beginning to understand that the behavior of their buyers has changed. And they realize that when they look both at the B2C end consumer and the B2B business market, that there is certainly consistency in saying that the use of the internet and the ability of a customer or prospective customer to do research is so good now that companies need to be very agile at one, being able to attract a customer to their website so that they can give them access to information that they will hope will help them in that buying process. And inbound, as the name suggests, is how you are pulling customers to you, and you're not at this stage knowing how far they are along their buying cycle, but your interest is to bring them to you so that the terms of relationship you have are that you're pulling them in rather than maybe in the traditional way that over many years we've seen marketing, which is by being noisy and pushing a message out. So what's changed with inbound is the whole power that the consumer has, the approach to the level of research they do as a buyer before they make a purchase, and the fact now that companies are slowly realizing that to try and influence that purchase, that they have to have information relevant to the solution that a customer is looking for, either to address a particular problem or to help them with taking advantage of an opportunity.
Can you give me some good examples?
I think if you look at the somebody who is buying a product, which typically could have a long sales cycle, if I think of the B2B world, what historically a company would expect is that the sales team would have a relatively early contact with that customer because they would want to explain to that customer their product details or service details and why they should buy it, comparison with other products, features, functions, etc. Nowadays, what happens is that the customer has already gone along that sales cycle far further than the prospective seller realizes, because companies nowadays do far more of their own self-research, don't trust as much as the information that potentially they may read directly from a company, for example, in an advert, want to take advantage of It could be a community, a forum, recommendations. So they're looking at many other different sources of information to get to them to a point where they can make their own decision rather than be influenced by what the salesperson is going to tell them. And the only analogy I can put together for this change is that as buyers, we, I think, expected the customer to be more a gatherer type. So historically, as customers, we gathered information, and our main source of information was from the company. Nowadays, by the time they get to the company to make a purchase, they already have the information they need, and they've gone from a gatherer to a hunter. So now they have the information, they know functions and features, they understand the benefits. Now they want to talk about how they can get the best deal for them, be that price, value, delivery, etc. So there has been this change from a gathering to more of a hunter now. And inbound can be a part of that, because for a company to be looking for that source of information, then you can still be a part of that. But again, the mistake that many companies make is that when they have a touch point or an opportunity to have a conversation with a customer, they often take that as an opportunity to sell. So they are immediately thinking, historically, when a customer approached me, that was my chance to sell. Again, it's very different now, because it is less about selling and it's more about informing and educating. Because customers, they at some point need to understand what problem they have, and the role a company can have in the information that it creates is helping a company understand what that problem is, and then further along the relationship, maybe then begin to detail what the solution is, and then go on to talk about how they specifically can help. So it's really now breaking down that buying cycle so that me as a seller has to understand the power the consumer has, and the fact that when I have a contact with somebody, it's less about selling but more about helping them to articulate what problem they have and the kind of solutions that they can look for.
How can a company influence the results in that situation? If previously it was easy, you were contacting anyone who was showing some kind of interest. Now you have much less to do with those people. How can you control the results?
It's a lot about defining the persona of the buyer that you believe will be an ideal customer. Because what you have to do is not make, again, this common mistake that I hear every time I meet a company, which is when you ask them who is the buyer or who is their product or service for, it's very broad. Everyone wants to buy my product. They don't. And the first step of an inbound marketing methodology is to define and describe what your ideal buyer is, your buyer persona. Because what you want inbound marketing to do for you is help you articulate from a demographic, firmographic, life in the day of, hot buttons, typical areas that this persona would search for information, what would they be looking for to solve, so that you can start to obviously build the information you're going to provide them. So inbound today is trying to help you identify that buyer, what their digital body language is, so typically how they behave, and to some extent to understand the digital experience that they want to have, so that when you are trying to build your communication plan and creating a message, you have to understand both that as a consumer or as a buyer of a product, how you get to the point of when you want to buy is going to be different. So you cannot take this one-size-fits-all approach, because how I get there was different. So that's one thing. And inbound as a methodology is trying to get you to cluster those thoughts so that you create and build your communications based on a profile, so you're able then to be more focused in how you apply your communications, the message that you develop, that it's for a specific problem that someone's trying to address or opportunity they're trying to take advantage of, rather than trying to feel that you can sell to somebody something that doesn't quite fit what they want, but it may do partial. So it's really, really trying to find now, you have a solution, let's find the problem that it addresses and then bring the two together.
Often what happens here, or what I've heard, the buyer persona is something from the ideal world. This person actually never exists, because we think that it's a bold and beautiful and has no problems and so on. How do, and this is what companies really think who the buyers are, how to understand who is the real buyer?
You have to remember that a buyer persona is always going to be semi-fictional. So I wouldn't say that this is somebody you could describe and then immediately identify. So there are going to be, if I approach a buyer persona, I'm looking at a main persona, and then potentially I'm looking at sub-personas. So as a company, I would never recommend maybe more than 1 to 4 main personas, and then potentially underneath that you're going to have other characteristics that you would put into a bucket of maybe calling a sub-persona. The way that you then use that persona within the inbound methodology is that you're doing this to learn. So you never have the correct answer straight away. You're going to have a profile that you will then, to your best intent, use that to build your workflow, messaging, and the different platforms. Now, again, the way that inbound marketing approaches this is to always test, review, and potentially change. So it could be that I don't think you'll ever end up with the perfect vision of what the customer is going to look like. It, as I said, it's always about it being semi-fictional, so that it's something that's dynamic. So as you evolve an understanding of how the customer is behaving through the communication, how they're responding, the sentiment that you're able to see them sharing on social media, all these different things will allow you to evolve that persona. So I don't think you're ever in a perfect situation. It should have a level of change, because the whole philosophy is that the buyer behavior has changed. So there's nothing to say that it will remain stable as it is today. It will always evolve and continue to evolve. So that needs to be reflected in your persona as well.
Can you bring me some good example about a company who has described the persona very well, just to understand how concrete it should be?
Well, if I use HubSpot and their example, they have, for example, Marketing Mary. So, you know, they build an avatar based around the profile of a buyer of the HubSpot services, somebody that faces typical challenges on a daily basis, but has a degree of personalization in that persona. So the gender, the education level, family life, typically how many children they would have. They really go down into quite a lot of detail, so that you can build upwards from that profile, say a typical media behavior of how that persona is going to either the keywords they use in search, or how responsive they would be to a particular type of communication, to what their typical buying behavior is. Are they someone that needs to feel a lot of trust in the company? Are they somebody that needs to have a lot of nurturing as a prospect to get them to the stage? Or are they someone that once they have particular answers to specific problems, then they're happy to buy? But of course, you know, the most successful relationship you can have with a customer is a loyal one, where you also have to understand what would bring them back. So how can you create a desire in that customer through the development of a persona to understand how they can recommend you onto their network, how they can, how you can inspire them to go onto social media and share their story. So I think HubSpot has a number of personas, but that's just one example of a persona that's looking for a specifically marketing need. And as HubSpot has developed its software, it's really tried to continue developing that persona, but it builds all its functions and features around what it believes that persona needs in a marketing role, for example.
Are there, you told now about HubSpot, that is kind of IT and more kind of business-to-business company. Can inbound marketing be used in also fast-moving consumer goods, or should this area be left to the traditional, it's called outbound marketing?
No, I think the introduction of outbound marketing as a methodology has been organic. So it means that it's never been sensed that Monday I use outbound and then Friday I stop outbound and I use inbound. That would be nice, but life doesn't move at that pace. So what you tend to find is that many industries, and it can be both B2B and B2C, today, I'd say it's 65% business to business and around 25% business to consumer and about 5% nonprofit is how I would divide up certainly what 2015 was in those customers that bought into inbound and HubSpot. But the way I would probably subdivide that slightly is that you have to look at the needs of a company based, to be honest, on its size. And you tend to find that the larger companies tend to take a budget approach, which gives them the opportunity to mix both outbound and inbound. Because historically, they've had a core business driver through outbound, pushing communication out to the customer, following up with their telephone call, direct sales, and direct mail, you know, out-of-home advertising, et cetera, et cetera. Where I see a big difference is that if I look at the SMB, SME, so the small to medium-sized market, they do not have that budget. They do not, in many cases, even have a marketing department. They tend to be far more sales-orientated because historically that's just how they've developed. With those companies, I see a far higher penetration of them using inbound almost exclusively. So the bigger companies tend to mix outbound and inbound, but are taking more inbound, and so displacing outbound. And the small to medium tend to be far more inbound. Some can be 100%, but again, because of budget situation and the fact that many of these companies tend to have, have just generated or evolved from being a startup and now through an accelerator. So they have maybe a different approach to business. They're a little bit more digital savvy. They understand how the buyer has changed, and therefore they have to change their whole approach to how to bring that buyer to them as a business. And they're a little bit more flexible. So that they have to be agile in terms of both using what budget in terms of either time and money in a way where they can see a relatively quick response, but also they don't want to take an approach where it's purely, say, paid for advertising, which maybe is a bit more outbound, because they don't have a budget to consistently do that. So lots of these businesses are looking for organic growth, and organic growth is going to be more effective from inbound than it is going to be from outbound. So it depends, I think, on industry, depends on B2B, B2C, but also on size of company.
But how can a small company that doesn't probably even employ a marketing manager can manage with the workload that inbound marketing will bring? It's much easier to order an advertising campaign from an agency, both the creatives and the media, and push it out instead of trying to build all the kind of brand personas and understanding the needs and all the communication. And then you don't even see the result at the first day.
Mm. I guess it's a little bit the reason that you employ a software or a marketing technology is to do a lot of the, if we call it, the heavy lifting. So you can use a system to set up a disciplined approach to pre-planning. So you can load your content in advance, use when you have time, as opposed to have to do this every single day. So you can pre-plan, pre-load, decide on a calendar, put your information in, and then distribute. So that you can do easily through the system. Where I see more of the challenges that companies face, it's more about understanding the customer. So even to the level that, I mean, as we describe a buyer persona, obviously we're describing it in a lot of detail, but even companies at the basic level, just understanding why someone is buying from them, how did they come to them? I mean, these are all things that a company should automatically know, but they don't. So it's a small challenge, but they have to overcome that. The bigger challenge to me is that if you think of inbound marketing as the engine, the fuel that needs to be coursing through that engine is content. Because if you don't have content, you don't have the magnet that's going to bring the visitor to your website. So I think it's more of an issue of content creation or curation and less of an issue of how do I do this, because you can have the systems work that for you. So from experience, where I spend most time with customers is calming them down, focusing them on what somebody wants to hear about them to, as we said, solve a problem, et cetera, et cetera. And then just taking time to work out that actually they are very good at creating content, but they always think of it from their own perspective rather than the view of what the customer wants. So it's sometimes just trying to get them to take this in a very basic approach. And then they realize that actually what they have to say isn't boring. There is somebody out there that wants to read it, but it is a slower process, especially if you're doing that internally rather than buying those resources in. Because many small companies, you're right, it's the senior management that do everything, and they tend to be very control orientated, so they don't want somebody else to do this because no one knows the company better than them. But what I have to explain is that you have to think from a customer view, not the company. So whether they know the company or not, what they're looking to do is address a problem, not understand in day one everything about your company. So those are the points of friction that I often have, is the discipline, content creation, and thinking a little bit outside the box, where you don't think of your company, you think of the customer. So then you have to get into this mode of education and information, not selling.
Let's talk about the content creation and curation. Let's say that my question is, let's take the small company who just started. How many pieces of content is enough in your strategy to do the work? Is about couple of, is it about tens or hundreds or thousands? What is the, what is, let's say so that if I narrow it down to one persona.
Well, the way that I sit down with the company and go through the different steps is that I would expect a company to do a minimum one blog a week. And then for every blog, you would need one piece of content, and that content is then created around a gated piece of information. Because remember, the whole currency of inbound marketing is that I can persuade a prospective customer to give me their email address. So my currency is an email address. Your currency as a prospective customer is something valuable enough that you know you're going to give me something that I'm going to come and communicate back to you about. So how can I get you to give me your email address? And that's where it comes back to creating a good piece of content. So one blog a week, one piece of content. I would say minimum 2 to 3 social media shares of either, for example, your blog, but then what other information can I as a company share to let a prospective customer see that maybe I'm a thought leader in a particular field? Or if I'm, for example, planning that this week or this month I have a particular theme, how can I do more to embellish that theme so that a prospective customer sees, wow, these guys, they really know what they're talking about. It's not just product A. They're really talking about the industry. They're talking about trends. They're talking about the economy. They're very varied in terms of what they can talk about. So you're looking at that. You're looking at making sure that what information you're sharing obviously has relevance to the content that you have on your website. And then hopefully at the same time as you're building gated content that someone's going to give you an email for, you want to then work out in terms of a workflow. So this is where the marketing automation comes in for inbound marketing. If a customer does action X, Y, Z, how should I be following up with that? What should be my response or reaction? Where do I want to take that customer to? If they do those three things, are they a marketing qualified lead, or have I got them down now as far as a lead where I should hand this lead to a salesperson now and they should follow up? So yes, there is, I think, extensive scope for content creation. One of the biggest challenges I see is that companies, when it comes to content, think so far ahead, they're worrying about the next couple of months when they just need to take the first step. So start with maybe sharing on social media to get a position. Then start writing a blog so you get through your personality. Then create content that you put under the gated so that you can get someone to click on a call to action, get them to land on a landing page, and then you're starting to actually really begin to use inbound marketing. But it tends to be something that happens over a course of weeks that a company then gets in that frame of mind. But it's unusual for it to happen immediately because companies tend to have to think of things outside silos and start putting information together. And that can take a little bit of time for them to work out how to do that.
So if I was listening or when I was listening to you carefully, then it mostly means that, correct me if I'm wrong, that it's about 1 day per week. For yeah. Social media, writing a blog, sharing, finding the photos, checking the facts, preparing whatever documents or reports or results. So is this the workload we are talking about?
Yeah, if I use HubSpot as an example, they believe, and they've had nearly 10 years now of experience, and they have over 15,000 customers, that if you can spend between 8 to 10 hours a week using inbound marketing, they believe that after 6 months, you should be able to increase by sixfold the number of leads coming to your website. So typically, let's say the sweet wow. spot would be 40 hours, but over 6 months, you're able to then see an increase of up to 600% of the leads that would come to you. So okay. I think it's worth the effort.
Absolutely. But of course, thank you. It's a good example. But it means also that it won't happen today. It's about half a year really dedicated work, thoughts, trying to discover the persona, the needs, to understand what type of blogs to write, to do it on a very professional level, and then you would see the increase.
I think it's probably a compromise of that. I don't think any company would want to communicate something that they didn't feel proud and confident of. But what tends to happen is that when you go through that process, you're not just helping inbound marketing, because then the company takes a different focus then. Because with inbound marketing, the two areas it's great for is consolidation of activities, which is why you use a software platform, and transparency, because you can see the response to everything you do. And yes, it's a little bit of a steep ladder to climb, but I can assure you, once you deal with a company, they get on board and they start seeing that there is a difference, i.e. that people have read their blog, have reshared something they've put on social media, then that tends to then encourage and incentivize. And 6 months does seem a long time, but you would already within a month see a difference, both in how you presented yourself as a company, because whether you know, you're actually developing your personality and your brand. So 6 months is, a golden period that you should see a high level, but you will see a stepped increase, incremental, every month to get you to that spot. It also means that you obviously find a lot more about you as a company. You are looking to interact with your team, so everybody can contribute to content. There shouldn't be just one editor, because again, the more people you can get involved, the different perspective you will have, and what as a blog works one week may work extremely differently the next week when somebody else writes it, because it has a different perspective. So these are all, I think, benefits of going through that process. The whole premise behind inbound marketing is that it's organic growth, because what the methodology doesn't want to do is be a tap that you turn on and off. It's more about growth for the longer term, with the hope that if you follow the parameters, you do see that incremental growth. But it's more about growth for the long term, so that when you do the Google search, that you are rising up the ranks of the organic, as opposed to having to rely on your Google AdWords campaign, which we all know can be effective, but as soon as you reduce your level of investment, you just drop off. So it's always about focusing on how you can create organic as opposed to paid for growth.
Absolutely. Can you tell me a bit about the risks as well? What can go wrong?
Well, I think probably the initial risk is that you are either not setting your goals appropriately. So you need to make sure that you lay out your key performance indicators, how long it's going to take, what is your budget, what is the investment, what's your expected return. A smart approach to setting up those goals is a very effective way to then obviously measure how you've achieved. Rather than just having a goal that I want to increase traffic to the website. Okay, well, what kind of traffic, from which source, over what period of time, what's the level of conversion? Because we're all familiar with being able to spend on a search and increase traffic to the website. However, what I see regularly with many of my customers is that they get a lot of traffic, but none of it is really qualified. So they lose out because they're investing in achieving a goal, but they haven't been specific on what happens when they get that traffic. So I think goal setting is something that's key, that you have to make sure you have. I think, as Anna, we've discussed a few times here, that it's about underestimating actually the effort that goes into this. So you do have to make sure that you can commit time and money, obviously, to making sure that you have the content created. I think it's very tempting to see once your traffic is starting to build that you're premature in going out and selling to them too early, because you feel like, I've had an effect here, now I want to take advantage of that. So it's making sure you don't sell too early, that you need to still understand where is that prospect or profile in their sales life cycle. So don't go too early on it. I think that you have to look at the combination of a tool and a methodology, because I've often read about many tools that I think people expect that they turn the tool on in the morning, and then by the end of the day, these leads are going to be generated for them. So yes, a tool can do many, many things, but it has to be led, it has to be fed, and someone has to be there to make sure that if something is not working, then you change it. So inherent is that you will take time to assess, analyze, and review what you're doing. So it's not just about input and output, it's making sure that you allocate time that it's going the way that you want. How do I compare to the KPIs I set? Or I noticed that this is going a direction that I didn't actually intend, but maybe I can get even more from this by doing other things. So it's really looking at that. And making sure that when you look at the workflow, so if you create a campaign, really think through the different consequences of what will happen when you have that interaction with that prospective customer. So don't look at it as just one step. They downloaded information, great. Right, now what are you going to do when they've downloaded? Are you going to send them a thank you email? Are you going to send them an email that says, well, you downloaded that, John. We recommend you download this as well because it's really great and we think you'd like it. So it's trying to extrapolate what that relationship could go to. So you're not just looking at this as one step. You have to think about what would be the conclusion of this. If I have someone who's having a relationship with me now, how do I get them to the bottom of the funnel? Because a lot of the activities that we do today as companies is attracting traffic into the top of the funnel. And then we think a little bit about the bottom of the funnel, how they come out and we want to sell to them. The risk is that you don't think about the middle of the funnel. So how can I nurture those leads that I'm getting? Because I often see companies think about bringing people in and selling to them. They don't often think about how they nurture them through. The other risk sometimes I think is a disconnect between sales and marketing. And HubSpot has coined this phrase, which is smarketing, so sales and marketing. And I think what they're trying to articulate is that often companies have, you know, a sales and a marketing team. Not all companies have that luxury. But just to make sure that if you're having the two resources work together, that the marketing is bringing in the lead and the salesperson is then closing the lead and getting the sale and the revenue, that they're talking to each other, they have a relationship with each other, and that can be over different levels, but sometimes you have to formalize that. So maybe you need to look at a service level agreement. You know, how many leads do you deliver? How many marketing qualified leads? How do you get the sales qualified leads? So ensuring that you avoid risk by getting the different teams talking to each other is always going to help you. And then, you know, like I said, in the middle of the funnel, just making sure that you understand that the content that you create for the top and what information and content you create for the bottom is going to be different from what you have in the middle. So it's a different stage, therefore it requires a different approach. So it's not the same information or approach all the way through the funnel. It's because we have these different life cycle stages. We need to understand, for those in the middle of the funnel, how can I get more of them to move down the funnel rather than just try and sell to everyone and hopefully someone will buy?
Thank you. It was a lot of explanation.
Yeah, sorry.
But it really, Let's say so that it doesn't feel the easiest thing in the world, but I still hope that people will consider, think, and at least some of them will be convinced to make a try, some more compared to those who currently use the inbound marketing methods.
Well, I think, some of the mistakes that companies make is they go into this because they've been sweet-talked by a salesperson, and they only tell them half the story. I would rather have a company buy into inbound that knew the risks but knew the benefits and went into it open-eyed. And, that will be a successful company that I can come back to as a case study, and they will stand up and say, this was fantastic for us. So I think you also have to be honest and say that maybe inbound isn't for everyone. But the other perspective, again, for inbound is that, it involves, for example, how you develop your approach to social media. So maybe to you, inbound is just social selling. It can be an element of, it doesn't have to be the whole toolkit. You can always take away parts of inbound and see how that works for you. And social selling isn't going to cost you anything other than your effort. So you can always try little bits of it and then build up to a position where, I want to do more of this. I want to invest in a marketing automation platform or a software that allows me to consolidate all this together, so at the same time I can see activity and return. And then you're ready for investing in something like HubSpot.